Good morning. I'm actually impressed. 8:30 in the morning and this room is totally full. So, before we get started, I actually wanted to call out one or two more talks that my team is doing today. Glenn Condren from my team, if you're interested in Energy Framework and missed any of the Energy Framework talks this week, he has a talk at 10:15 today in N104. So if you're interested in Energy Framework, please go see Glenn in N104 at 10:15 a.m. Glenn from my team also is doing a talk on async, .NET and async and web at 2:45 today. So if either of those is interesting to you, check those out. First off, to start off, introduce myself. I'm Scott Hunter. I work in the Azure team at Microsoft. The name of our team is actually the Azure Developer Experience team, and we develop a variety of things. We develop basically all of the server-side .NET components. So we build all of ASP.NET and its frameworks like MVC, Web API, Web Pages, Web Forms. We build Entity Framework and WCF, and that kind of composes our server-side components. We build all the tooling in Visual Studio that around web. So we build the HTML editors, the CSS editors, the JavaScript editors, plus the web project system and the publishing tools that are inside of Visual Studio. And we also build the Azure SDKs that we ship. So that's kind of the umbrella of our team. Does anybody here know who Scott Guthrie is? So we, of course, work for Scott Guthrie. Everybody know who Scott Hanselman is? Got a few folks? So if you've never seen me before, we kind of laugh at Microsoft. The way we name ourselves is you have an alias, and your alias is typically the last two letters of your name. And so I'm Scott Hunter, so my last alias is H-U, who, and Scott Hanselman is Ha, H-A, and then we have Guthrie, which is goo. And so what we typically call it, if I was at Build this week, when we get all of us together, we call that a goo-hoo-ha. Back in the days when Phil Hack was on my team, he was a ha. So if Phil and Scott Hanselman got together, that was a ha-ha. That's kind of how we talk about this stuff. Anyways, I'm here today to talk about web services, mainly about web API, and how you can build websites, mobile apps with these things. So I've got a couple of things I want to talk about today. I'm going to talk about what I call the example scenario that my app that I'm going to build today is based on. I'm going to talk about how, after you build a web API, how do you actually test this thing? And it was funny, I wanted to make sure that everything I showed today was on Visual Studio 2013. And when I go back, I have to tell my team that making the test client work on Visual Studio 2013 is much harder than making it work on Visual Studio 2012. I'm going to talk about portable class libraries today. These are a mechanism where you can build a library that you can share between a variety of different applications, a phone app, a Windows Store app, and even an Xbox app. And so I'm going to show you how you can build a web API, and then once you have that API, you can build a client library for that. That's what we call portable, and can be used on all those platforms I just talked about. We're going to show an app using that portable library from Windows 8 Store. I'm going to show an app from Windows Phone as well. If I'd brought some more equipment with me, I would have actually showed how to take that same portable library and actually use it on iOS and Android. You can actually take a C# portable library, and using some tools from Xamarin, you can actually run that across every mobile platform there is. So it's kind of like write once, run everywhere. I've got a couple of new features in Web API that are part of the release that we just shipped. One's called Attribute Routing. I'll do a little demo of Attribute Routing. Another one is Cross-Origin Resource Sharing. That's mainly about I build some apps, some APIs, and then I have a website at a different domain that wants to call an API. How do you do that? That's a feature we just enabled. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the authentication support we have coming into Web API. When we ship Web API, last September as part of VS 2012, we didn't actually have a great authentication story, and we built a much better story now, and I'll drill into that. So to talk about the app that I'm going to play around with today, which is kind of funny since I'm actually not in the United States, it's basically a database of United States zip codes, cities and states, and their longitude and latitudes. So I've got a database of all those things, and then I'm going to have a web API that you can give it a longitude and latitude and say, find me all the things in the some radius of that that longitude and latitude. And so this is just an example of what my database looks like, and I'll drill into that as I go. So first off, I've got a NED Framework class, and it's got basically my zip code, my city, my state, and it's got a location. The location is using a SQL type called geography type, which doesn't map very well to an app. So I'll actually, in my app, I'll have a view model that actually breaks those things back out into longitude and latitude, because that's more of what a phone would actually be able to understand. Obviously, a phone or a desktop or a Windows Store app might not be able to know what a DB geography is, especially if you're switching to iOS or Android. So let's play around with this. Before I start, I wanted to point out something. If you want to read about the release that we just released yesterday, the VS 2013 release, and all of the ASP.NET stuff that's associated with that, you can go to www.asp.net/vnext. This is where we always have our vnext content. And you can see here we've got a couple of things that talk about the new functionality. Those will link off. You can also, a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about today, like Web API, I went to the ASP.NET website, solutions, selected Web API. We've got documentation for most of this stuff. So if you come here and look at routing and actions, you'll find that I've got some stuff down here for attribute routing and Web API too. If you dig around, pretty much everything I'm going to talk about today, there'll be some new docs up there. And if they're not there today, they'll be up there really soon. So let me bring up an app. So to start off, I just want to dig in a little bit and show what I've got a class library that's my data model here. So if you look at it, I've got a location record using NED Framework code first. So I just write this class, and then EF code first will actually build a database for me based on these types. The way that works is I have a data context over here, and you'll notice that my data context just has a single property, US locations, that derives from DB set of that type. All you do in EF code first is you create a context, and in your context you create a DB set for every type you want, and we build a database for you. That's not very exciting. If I go look at my API here, though, I've got a repository. So I've got a repository class, it keeps a context, and inside of here, this is kind of where the interesting code comes from. You can see that get by distance, I let somebody pass that. I see what the query looks like. I can press F12 here. Distance query is basically just give me a longitude, a latitude, and some kind of radius, how far you want to go, and we'll build the stuff for you. And so if you look at this code here, it's pretty simple. First off, I create a geography query here, and it's taking my longitude and latitude from that that distance object. And then the APIs that we have for geography are all based on meters. And because I'm an American, I did some math here to convert the meters to miles. And then you can see this is where I'm doing my EF code first query to return a bunch of locations. It says, look in this table, do a geo query with a distance location less than or equal to how many miles that I put in, and then we want to bring back 10 results. We don't want to bring back the whole database and bring that back as a list. And after I get that list, I then convert that into a simple model of city, latitude, longitude, state, zip code, and return that back. So that's the API that we're going to call, or that's the data context that I have, and I'm going to build an API around that. So let's look and see what that looks like. Close this down. So here I've got a web API, and my web API basically, if I look at my references here, you're going to see it's going to reference that class library here. That's how it actually gets that access to that. And I'm just going to build a very simple controller here. In Web API, a controller is just something that derives from API controller. So you can see I derive from API controller. I create that same location repository that we just showed from my class library. And I've got a single method here called get. And it basically takes a couple parameters, distance, latitude, longitude, latitude. And what it will basically do is call that same API that I just showed you guys and then return the data as iQueryable. So that's the API. So now that I've got this, the first question that I always come to play is, how do I use it? So if I run the app, starting with a release that we did in February, when we first shipped Web API, we gave you no help at all. In February, we added support for what we call a documentation page. So I can run my application. The reason a default Web API application has an MVC app in it as well is so we can do stuff like this for you. So I've got this documentation page here. Here's my APO, get by geo. And here's how I can call it. Shows the methods, gives me the examples of what it would actually look like when that data comes back. But the first thing that comes to my mind is, I want to try it now. You can run Fiddler or a variety of tools, or you can actually add a test client directly to the application. So we have a great guy on our team, Yao, that wrote a test client. This URL that I have here for this is in my demo, in my slides. So you'll be able to see the slides and find this URL. And this basically is, we have a NuGet package that adds a help client or a test page to that application, so I can actually call it directly from the MVC app. So let me do that. What I found is, working on this, was that we actually made this harder to do than it used to be. Some of our customers complained to us that when we shipped Web API, we shipped too many assemblies and too much stuff with it. So we used to have jQuery and jQuery UI, Knockout, and a bunch of other stuff, and we removed all that stuff. Well, unfortunately, the test client depends on that stuff. So the first thing I need to do is go and put some of that stuff back. So I'm going to load NuGet up. Manage NuGet packages here. Good. And let's add Web API test client. Can I find it? So here we go. Here's a simple test client for Web API. I'll install that. NuGet's awesome, goes and finds all the dependencies, hooks them in. But as I said, it did not actually, I'm glad I'm doing this talk, because with Web API, if you were using Visual Studio 2012, it will pretty much work at this point. Because I'm using VS 2013, and we decided not to ship as many libraries with this version, I've got to add a few more things here. So let me go back to the NuGet Package Manager, and let's add jQuery UI. Install him. Let me add Knockout. And when I get back, I'm going to have my team hopefully update that test client to actually include the bits, so you don't have to go and add these packages manually. They'll just be there. So I've added the libraries that I need, and now I need to make a few changes here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my bundle file. Bundle is a way that we actually put scripts into files. And I'm just going to add a few items to this bundle here. So I'm basically adding jQuery UI, the CSS for jQuery UI, and Knockout.js. And then what I'll do is I'll go to my layout page. I'll add support for the same things here. Basically, at the top of the layout page is a list of all the stuff that we depend on. I've got these written down right over here. I'll stick these in. So now I've got that done. I've got to make one more final change to actually get this to work. We'll go to the area for the test client. I'll go to the APIs here. And the web page actually talks about how to do all this. I'll go add these two items here to enable the test client. As I said, hopefully we'll get this NuGet package updated to do a lot more of this for you. So all you should have to do once we fix the NuGet package is basically add these two things here. Okay. So I've got this running now. Let's run again. And it's basically saying I can't run that URL, which is fine. So here I am again. The difference now is if I go to API, I'm going to click my geo, and now not only does it give me examples of how to actually call this, but there's a new button at the bottom of the screen here called Test API. If I click that, a box pops up. We actually go figure out all the parameters that your API takes, and you can type them in here, and we will actually call the API for you. So let me put in something like this. I've got some sample latitude and longitudes here. I'll press send. It should crunch for a bit. And hopefully return my results. Bingo. Incorrect connection string. I can solve that. Yeah, so one thing I did last night is I when I came here, actually the connection strings aren't in the app. When I came here, my plan was after VS 2013 was released, I wanted to update all of my libraries to support 2013, which was actually interesting. Just stick these in. Back. Try one more time. There we go. So you see the response comes back. Pretty cool. So right from the app, you can build an app, let people inside of your organization actually come and try it out using the help page, see how it's supposed to be called, and via the help page can actually call it directly themselves using the test client. So I think the test client's an awesome way to build apps, and pretty simple to set up, especially once we fix the package. So that's kind of that. While I'm here, I'd like to talk about one other new feature that we added in the new release that came out earlier this week, and that is we added a feature called attribute routing. Today, the way it works in Web API is it works very similar to MVC. We're going to add attribute routing to MVC as well. If I go look at my application in my app start, I'm going to have this route config. And here's my route built in. G changing this stuff is actually, in my opinion, kind of complicated. Because to change it, you've got to go figure out this route and write a route for every controller that you have if you want to have special routes. And I don't always, I kind of disconnect my class from this file. And so a common request to us over the years has been, it'd be great when I'm actually writing a controller just to be able to put attributes directly on that controller to change how it works. And we're doing that now. So if I go back and look at my controller, I actually put some attributes in here last night and commented them out. So the first one is something called route prefix. And in some ways, this is how you might want to do versioning as well as part of your route. So what I did is I just uncommented out these two route prefixes. So now on my controller, I can put a route prefix on. And that route prefix basically says, here is the way to call this controller. And you'll notice here I've got two of these here. The first one is API/geo. And then the second one is API/v1/geo. So if you're actually building an API, you probably want to version it. And you probably want to have like API/web API or /geo be the default one that you always get. That gives you the latest version. But if clients want to actually hard code themselves to a particular version, you provide that as well. And so in this case, because my first version and version one are the same, I'm putting these two prefixes in here. Before, I'd have to go to my route table and do that. If I just rerun this app, adding those two attributes, I go back to the API page. It does not change. What have I done? One thing I could have done. You can see that I actually say map HTTP attribute routes, so that should actually enable this functionality. Do I have something cached? I don't know why it's not picking that up. What that's supposed to show is it's supposed to show those two new attributes, those two new routes that I just added should actually show up here. And then I can go in further on my shouldn't care about the region. I was going to show you can go even further in attribute routing as well, is on an item-by-item basis, I can actually go remap. I don't know why my help page is not showing it, but I'm still want to just talk to it. In this case, I'm putting an HTTP GET attribute on this method, and I'm changing the URL for how you would change this. Normally, this is just a GET request, so we would expect a GET with all these parameters on the query string. And what I did here is I actually said, What I really want is you call foo, then you see a distance, then you call moo with a latitude, and then you would actually have the distance on the end of that. So I can actually change the parameters around, move stuff around. You have full control to change stuff with the routes. I don't know why it's not picking up in my help. But that's how it works. Basically, you just add these attributes. And that's a new feature in Web API 2, which works, by the way, Web API 2 will work both on VS 2012 and 2013. These are just NuGet packages that you can actually upgrade to grab these things. So let me close that out. And I'll switch back over here. And so You know, to recap, NuGet, any browser, all the templates are CSHTML files, which means you can actually change those templates as well. So if you want to go customize that help page to make it look better or look how you want to do it, there's a link here to Yao's page, which talks about how to use this thing, how to customize it. And then here's a link to the NuGet package. The deck's available online, so you don't have to like grab these URLs now. There's another option as well if you want to test an API. If you're using Google Chrome as your browser, there's a Chrome plugin called getpostman.com. And you can see from the picture here that if you put this plugin on your Chrome and point it to Web API, you'll be able to have the same kind of rich functionality where you can basically fill in all your fields and get the request back. Same kind of thing built into Chrome with this plugin. So that's another option for trying an API out. Yeah?
Do you need to have MVC to have the Web API, or can you use a standard web form app?
So Web API doesn't take a dependency on any of our technologies, technically. So if I switch back, it's over here. Let me just show you. This is VS 2013. There's a feature we added in VS 2013 called One ASP.NET. The question was, does Web API take a dependency on any of our technologies? Can you use it in web forms? Can you use it in MVC? Does it depend on anything? It doesn't require anything. So this is the new dialog box that we created in VS 2013 for web. I only have one ASP.NET type of application now. I'll select OK here. And I'm going to select empty in this case, but I'll say I want Web API. So I'm now creating a project. This is a Web API project that uses no other technologies. Now what's cool about this is nothing prevents me from coming into this application if I want to. I can just add a Windows form, a web form here. This will work fine. I can also go the other way as well. I can create a project. Let's create a web form project. And I can take any project. So if you have an MVC project, a web form project, a web pages project, once you're on VS 2013, after you have that project created, all you've got to do is come into your project, right-click, say Add Scaffold. I'm going to scroll down here. We're going to make this list easier to scroll through in the future. Say I want to add a Web API, default controller. Right now, VS is going out, adding all the NuGet packages required to make Web API work. And then notice it even brought a README file up saying, here's a few extra steps you've got to do. But the point is, you can use Web API in any of our projects, and it doesn't take a dependency on any other things. Does that answer your question? Cool. Next thing is, I'm going to talk about portable class libraries. And this is really important when you start building applications that use APIs. So does anybody know what portable libraries are? Good. Not too many people. The idea behind portable libraries is letting you write a .NET class library that can be used against all of the versions of .NET and all of the phone, Windows Store, Server, even WinForms, WPF, etc. This deck basically talks. One thing that people typically do is they add code, and instead of adding code, they add a link to the code. So you're actually you have a store project, a phone project, a server project, and you think you're actually reusing code, but what you're really doing is like just sharing links to code, so you only have one copy of the code. But you're not actually building a library. We don't recommend doing this. You don't want to have the spaghetti where you have the same code files being shared across a ton of projects. You're much better off having a library that's shared between all of those things. And the technology for this is something called portable class libraries. it's a common subset of .NET that can be used across all those platforms. So in this case, I take my common portable library and I share it against the web, the phone, Windows, even Silverlight. And so let me just do a quick run of how that works. So while I'm in VS for fun, I'll just create a fake one of these just to show you what this looks like. When you create a project, just by accident, there's portable class library in the web node. It'll actually go away in the RTM version of the tool. But if I select a portable class library, what happens here is I'll just build one of these. And the first thing it does is it comes up and asks me, what frameworks do you want to support? So note that there's, I can choose .NET 4, 5, or higher. I could even choose other versions of .NET as well if I wanted to. I can choose Windows Store 8 or 8.1. I can choose Silverlight, and I can choose Windows Phone. So you can basically make a library, check the frameworks that you want to support, and then build that. And so it's that simple. So it just happens to be that I've built one of these portable libraries. I've got it right here. So here's my app again. I've got my data layer that you've already seen before. And I've got my portable library here. And I think I can even right-click on this. I could show you what things it supports. But the big thing I want to point out here is all that I did here is I wrote a simple method. And let's not use the cloud. Let's use local. I wrote a simple method here. This is what if I'm going to write a phone app, a client app, I want to call that web API. I want to share that logic. So what I do is I've got some code here that takes the URL. Here's my API. Here's my get by geo, my parameters. We basically take this query that you pass in. We use string format to replace all these values to build your URL up. And then we new up an HTTP client. This is something that's kind of new. HTTP client is something we shipped in the 4.5 timeframe for calling web APIs. And since then, we've made a version of HTTP client that works on phone, that works on store. It already worked on server. So basically, it's one library that you can use anywhere to call these things. I new up an HTTP client. I build a message with this URL calling get. Then I use the await keyword to do an asynchronous call to that method. And then I use another await to process the results. And then I use JSON.NET, a common NuGet package for doing JSON serialization, to basically take the result of that and return it as a serialized list of location objects. And so this is my API. I built it in here. And in this particular project, I actually also included the API. And what I'll do is I'll start the API. Start one of these guys, get him running. So there he is. And then I'm going to go back to my Solution Explorer. And I've also got a simple client here. And this client is just a console application. And the console application builds up a object to call. It's going to pass a distance, longitude, latitude, and it's going to call that API that I just wrote. It's going to get the results back. It's going to loop through the results and write them to the screen. So if I run this, I'll get my console app up. It's going to crunch a second while my database is working, and hopefully it will actually return a list of results. So what I've shown is I built a portable class library, and I've written the client stuff to call that server API that I've already written. And then I just added that portable library to a console application showed that I can call that library from a console. So I've shown how to call from a console. The next thing that I might want to do is I might want to build a Windows or a desktop version of the same thing. So I learned something interesting last night. Said my goal when I got here was to actually run everything in VS 2013. I wanted to show the newest tools. And I found that VS 2013 only lets you build Windows Store 8.1 apps. And I don't have Windows 8.1 on my machine. And so I was not able to actually build a client for 8.0 in VS 2013. So this particular demo uses VS 2012 because that's the only way that you can actually build an app. So this is just a Windows Store app here. If I load up things like this. This will be my main page. What I've got here is I've got a... this is kind of a funny name, Zipcoder. If you follow my team at all, we created a product called SignalR a few months ago. And SignalR has the R because Damien Edwards, the guy who works on it, is an Australian. And so after that, we started R-ing everything. So we've got Zipcoder, we've got SignalR. Comically enough, at one point, there was an issue where we looked like the SignalR team might move to a different team, and I managed to make that not happen. And so then I was Hunter R. So the R thing is a current popularity thing in the ASP.NET team. So anyways, this is just a simple Windows Store app. It's got its title. It's got a distance slider and a find button. What it would normally do is it would actually call some APIs. I'll show you the code here. First off, I want to point out, it's referencing that portable library. So the same library that we wrote that we called from the console app, I'm now building into a Windows Store app. That's showing that different versions of .NET can use that same library. It is truly portable across these things. So normally what I would do is I've got this show zips function inside of this application, and normally it would take the position that's passed into it. So because I'm running a store app, I can actually ask the store app, where am I? This works great if I had a bigger zip code database that contained Europe as well as the US, but I've only got the US in mind. So what I basically did is I commented out the code that grabs that data and hard-coded it basically to a location in the United States, so it works correctly. But you'll notice here, this looks just like that console app. I'm going to call my query here. I'm going to use that to call that API that I wrote from that library. And then what I'm going to do is, and you'll note that everything I'm doing is async here. So my method is marked as async. I call my API asynchronously. And then once the data from the API comes back, I use this await dispatcher.run async. I don't know if anybody's ever run Windows before and had one of those dialogs pop up that says, the application's busy, do you want to wait? Or do you want to continue? That's caused when you run code that consumes the UI thread for a long period of time. The reason we're doing everything with await here is so as you call this resource, which could be located away from your application, we don't have that dialogue pop up in your Windows app. So we take the results here. We say run them async. I'm going to loop through them, and then all I do is I take the view model that's in this application, and I insert on line one the zip code, and on line two I insert the city and the state. And all the time this is going on, once I start the app, I basically take the find button and I dim it out, and now I turn the find button back on. So this is simple Windows Store app, and if I fire this up, it'll launch here. And if I do something like move this over here, you'll see location start showing up. So it's basically finding all the areas near New Orleans. within a 6-mile radius. And there you go. So I've basically taken my same API, I've built a console application with it, now I've built a Windows Store application with it. Throw that guy away. And it looks very similar if I let's launch another one of these. Anybody ever written a Windows phone app? Windows 8 phone app or Windows 7 phone app? So I will tell you something interesting. The Windows phone runs, the emulator runs in a virtual machine. It basically enables Hyper-V on your machine, so it actually runs in a full emulator. Trying to get that emulator to talk through the firewall, at least on the way that Corp has my network configured, and be able to talk to the API on the actual device, I found quite challenging. So in this particular case, I've got my same API running up in Windows Azure, and I'm going to make this version actually go talk to the public internet because it's actually easier for the phone emulator to talk to the public internet than to talk to my own machine, which seems crazy. But if you go read the internet, there's lots of people that have had the same problem. So make that small change. I'm going to build this application. And once again, I've got the same kind of scenario here. Here's my core API in a portable library, and I'm now showing that you can take that same library and share this with Windows Phone. So I've got an app here. Bring up the XAML for this app. Once again, you're going to see this looks very similar to what you saw before. Zipcoder. And it's got a find button, and it's got a distance slider that works exactly the same way. And what's cool is if you go look at the code for this, it looks pretty similar. I did the same basic stuff here. So you're going to see I'm basically going to ignore, again, the positions being passed in. The phone app's going to go and find my actual real geolocation. The cool thing is in the emulator, I could have cheated on this one. I could have made the phone actually work because when I run this, I'll show you. The emulator is pretty cool. You can actually set the location of where you are to try the geolocation functionality. I could have actually moved it to Redmond or something. And then you'll notice that I make the same call I made before. Await using async just as well. So I'm doing async call back to my API. This code looks slightly different. Mainly this dispatcher.begin invoke versus the code that I was running in the Windows Store app. But that really is the main difference you see between this. Once again, I loop through my loop through the results, and I apply them to the UI. So let me try this out. If any demo will fail, this would be the one that would fail. Okay, so my phone shows up. Once the phone is up, it will deploy the app to the phone. Here's the app. I was going to show you that cool API. So one of the cool things about the phone emulator is I can actually pop this window open over here, and then one thing I could actually change is location. I can make the location of the phone. Takes my typing. Anywhere I want. So the emulator is pretty cool from the standpoint that you can basically open a map up and make the phone think it's wherever you want it to be. Okay. Let's try this. Bingo. I'll add a few more of these here. So you can see I can take that same API, share it between console app, Windows Store app, phone app. That's really the world that we're in. We're in a world of what I call connected devices, and that's what makes Web API such an awesome feature in ASP.NET. You build your API, and then you build your client library, and you share your client library everywhere. One of the points that I'm not making a huge deal out of here right now is Xamarin has some tools. Let me just jump and go to their site. Xamarin's got some pretty cool tools. Xamarin. What they do is the guys responsible for Xamarin are the ones that build Mono, which is the version of .NET that runs outside of the Windows platform. And they have libraries that allow you, as I said, to basically allow you to run .NET on non-Windows devices. Why this is kind of cool is, as part of this, and part of the reason they do Mono, is this then allows you to take that same client library that I was just showing you and run it on iOS and Android as well. So you can basically run this thing anywhere. So we call it C-sharp anywhere. Create an iOS, Android, Mac, Windows apps, and C-sharp. Biggest thing for me that I would focus on is iOS and Android. I could write an iPad. I need to have a Mac up here to do that. But I could take that same portable class library that I wrote and share it with iOS and Android. That, I think, is really powerful when you can go and tell your bosses, hey, I'm going to build an API, I'm going to build a client library, and I'm going to share it across all the platforms. We think that's a pretty strong message, and it's pretty awesome. So I think that's why portable class libraries are important. I said, if I look here, so here you are with iOS, Android, iOS, and Mac. And so basically, theirs is a commercial product, but it's not very expensive. But if you are trying to build phone apps, pretty cool that you can, you know, share your code everywhere versus how you would do it today. Okay, so that's portable class libraries. I've got a slide here basically showing the point that I was just mentioning before, which is here is the scenario I just showed. I've got a Windows 8 store app. I've got a Windows 8 phone app. They're both sharing the same portable class library. Comically enough, the internal name for portable class libraries, if you read it, is Pickle. And so inside of Microsoft, we call them pickles. So you can build a pickle, and that pickle can be used by everything. My pickle here is calling across HTTP using HTTP client and talking to my web API controller. So the next thing that I want to talk about is something called cores. And the idea here is, you know, I'm assuming you're building APIs with ASP.NET Web API. A lot of the times when you build an API, you might build a website that consumes that API. And in that case, here I've got my foo.com. Request comes in from IE to foo.com. HTML comes back. I can make AJAX calls back and forth. It's great. Now, what if my API is on a different domain? Let's say you're hosting an API. You're sharing that API between phones and devices, and you want to build a separate website that calls that API. What happens? You get Gandalfed. You shall not pass. This is actually a browser protection feature that was built in the browsers because of all the security problems that we've had over the last couple of years. And so basically, this is so some bogus JavaScript can't run or be injected into a page on your site and just start arbitrary calling third-party sites. That's what prevents this. There's a technology called cores. It's a standard that everybody's working on now that actually enables you to do this. So once I enable cores, I can actually do cross-domain communication with JavaScript. So it shows that the scene that we just had before is happy now. And now cores, you still cannot arbitrarily call stuff. In the cores world, what happens is I would modify my bar.com would say it's okay if a website at foo.com wants to call me. Basically, you authorize this. So it's still not random people can call. It's controlled. So let me do a demo of this. I'm hoping the demo gods are going to like me because that app that I had that was not happy earlier is the one I'm going to use here. Just close a few of these guys down. So Chorus is interesting. Chorus is interesting from the standpoint that you actually have to turn this thing on. So let's try this. There basically is a NuGet package that enables Chorus support for a web API. And while I'm looking for that, here it is. I want to call out, this is one of the cool things about our stack. So if you don't know, we actually open sourced ASP.NET MVC, web API, web pages last spring. And both the attribute routing that I was showing earlier, that was not working for me, and the core support are actually features that came from the open source community. So there were third parties that actually had written their own core support for Web API. And we worked with them to clean it up and make it look really, really good and bolt it onto Web API. So this is a benefit where we're actually adding features to Web API via our open source support here. So let me add this. So I'll add this NuGet package to my API. And then one thing's interesting, before I even do this, what's the best way to demo this? Best way to demo this would be to launch one of my other apps here. I'm going to launch one of my other apps, I'm going to run it, and I'm going to try to have it actually make a cross-domain request and show that it doesn't work by default. So to enable this, I've got to come up here using system.web.http. Notice there's a new cores using here. And then I will have config.enable cores. So I basically added the NuGet package in my web API config. I boot up and I say enable cores. And then what I would do is I will go to my API, go to my controller. Let's add the same using up here. I do want to point out, while I'm showing all this, that once again, if I come over here, and I go to Web API, I believe we actually have a document for this as well. So let me see if I can just find it. I want to make sure so I can point you guys to it. Go to vnext and see if it's there. Because you want to go into more detail on this than what I'm going to go into on this. So we have new Web API functionality. There's my attribute routing. request patching. I know we have a cores doc. Yes, here's what I want to show. So here's the document here. It'll go into full detail on how this thing works. It's got a sample app as well. And basically, so there's the enable cores that I was just doing. And there's one more thing that you actually have to do, which is add an attribute to your controller. And this basically takes what we call an origin. So what I would do and then in this URL, I basically tell it what domains are allowed to call this application. So I could say http://foo.com, for example. And so at this point, I have taken my API, I've enabled core support for it, and in that core support that I've added for it, I've said any web page that's foo.com is allowed to call my API. And that's basically how this works. It's very simple. Doesn't demo very well, but it's very simple and it's very important, I think, as you build an API and you want to have other websites be able to consume this. This is an open standard. The only negative is I think you have to have IE version 9 or above to actually get this in Internet Explorer, but I know Firefox and Chrome all support this. Under the covers, what's going on is there's an authorization kind of model that goes where when somebody's making a request, they will pass their origin. We'll look at it, say yes, we see that the origin is foo.com, and if so, we'll let you pass, Scandoff will let you go, and you're in good shape. So that's cores. The next thing is web API and authentication. Authentication is a huge thing. You build these APIs. How do you actually then control who can actually access these things? When we shipped web API in September of last year, we didn't really have a lot of support for this kind of scenario. We do now. This will look very complicated, unfortunately, but this is just kind of the under the covers how this works. Basically, when you create a Web API 2 project in that Web API config start, you can basically configure it to say, I want to support what we call OAuth bearer tokens. This is a token that we'll use to authenticate. Then what will actually happen is the client app, and the reason I say client app, the client app could be a phone app, a store app, an HTML app. It comes and asks Web API, what providers do you support? And what we do is we return a bucket of URLs back to the client for them to figure out what they want to do. So this what would actually happen in your app at this point, and I'll demo this, is your app might pop up a screen that says, do you want to log in with Twitter, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, et cetera, et cetera. Then the user would select one of these. And this could be if you're in a phone, you're in a, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of app you're in, all apps support this. Once that comes up, if you check one of those buttons, that app would basically fire you off to whoever we're supporting or you want to use to go get that to authenticate. Once they authenticate, they send a request back to us with the fact that you've tried to authenticate. And then what Web API will do is it will actually take that credential string that comes back and we'll parse it into what we call a claim and then finally an identity. Once we've done that, we will create an access token And this access token will contain all that information, and or it contains the basic idea of that. And then every time that an API call is made, that bearer token needs to be passed as part of that request. And then on the web API side, our authorize attribute says, hey, if there's a bearer token that we support, we'll let the call go through. And so the idea here is we can let you actually have authentication using Windows Azure Active Directory, Active Directory, or all the OAuth providers that are out there today, like Google, Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft, Yahoo, et cetera. And this is all built in into Web API 2. So I've got a small demo of this. The demo that I have here is mainly focused around what I would call this is a client application using HTML. We don't have at this time frame, we will for RTM, we don't have the ability to easily do this from a store app or a phone app, but that's coming as well. So if I want to enable that, you know, what does that look like? So let me fire this up. I've got here, go to web, quick ASP.NET application, and I'm going to create what we call a single page application. And in this case, a single page application is a client application. It's all the code is on the client, and it calls a web API for all of its work on the back end. So this is the HTML version of the clients that can use this authentication model here. So what I would do is I would come in to App Start. I would find my startup auth. And you'll notice that one of the lines in the startup auth says, use OAuth bearer token authentication. This basically is enabling the application to support those types of tokens. And then what I can do is I can just comment in one of these providers. Notice there's a whole bunch of these here. There's Microsoft, Twitter, Facebook. If I run the app without turning one of those on, let's run this real quick without that turned on. You'll see that I can log in with a username and password in a local database, but I don't have any other items here. If I just go and turn this guy on. Now you see I have another service here. And just to give you an idea, so we wrote all the code for you here. If I look at my API is going to look pretty normal. So I've got a to-do controller, a to-do list controller. And I want to comment out point that we're doing a couple things here. First off, there's the authorize attribute. And then secondly, we're using attribute routing for this. So that's the URL for the controller. But because that authorize attribute's there, that means we won't let you call the methods on here unless you're actually authenticated somehow. So I'm going to jump into some scary looking code here. This is a VS 2012 feature, by the way, where you can actually expand all the way down to your functions directly in the Solution Explorer. We have this in VS 2012. And basically what I'm going to show here is, I'm going to put a breakpoint in here. I'll run the app again. Let's log in with Google. So I click that button. I'm fired off to the Google website. And I have no idea what that means. Obviously, I'm on the Spanish Google website. I'm going to assume the top one is me. Wow. What does it say? Does anybody know?
Basic information about your printer right now.
Ah, I guess I'll say accept. I have no idea what that said, but I think that what he was saying was, I don't know if anybody reads, how many people read Spanish in here, but that was basically saying, this website wants access to some of your data. So note that once that happens, the callback comes over here, and all I'm showing here is what we're doing is we're going to build a, talk to the identity store. And we're going to build this OAuth token that we return back to you. Yeah, sign up. So when that callback happened, we basically built that bearer token and returned it to the client. And now I've got this app. This app is all client side. So as I do stuff here, you know, I can add stuff. I'll briefly go into the client code here and show you what's going on. We'll sign out of here. If I go look at the code for the app, this is a client-side app, as I was saying before. So most of the code is going to be Ajax-y kind of stuff. But I want to see if I can find it real quick. So this is kind of interesting here. So this is where the Ajax code on the client makes calls to the API. And so anytime it calls Web API, it's going to call this Ajax request helper that we wrote. And notice that as part of this, you know, it's asking for JSON because it's Web API. It's going to take whatever URLs and stuff that we pass to it. But I think what's interesting here is headers. Notice it says get security headers. And if I F12 that, it'll take me up here, and we basically look at we look in two places. Based on what browser you're in, we either stored the access token that was returned from Web API, either in the session state of the browser, or we stored in local storage in the browser. And then you can see this returns authorization bearer access token. And so this is showing that every time I make an API call on my client-side application, we're appending that token to it, and that's what allows us to make those calls. And so that's kind of a quick, brief flow-through of how this works for client-side applications. Once again, we're going to release libraries in the RC or RTM timeframe that will actually let you do the same thing from a store app, which you could then build a portable library, do all the same work, and it works both in, you know, Windows Phone, Windows Store, iOS and Android. Using our library, you could also write iOS and Android yourself. But it's the direction we're going, basically giving you full access to Web API via OAuth and everything else. Yes, question in the back. So you know, I can do, the question was, how does this work with the regular membership database? And it works pretty much the same way. So that the account controller that we wrote in the application, if I decide I want to come over here and create an account. So people asked me earlier today, my nickname is on Twitter and everywhere is Cool CSH. I found that when I got on the internet, that Scott Hunter was like consumed everywhere. And so my initials are Carl Scott Hunter, and so that's where the CSH comes from. But so in this case, I'm using local membership. I'm actually my credentials are being stored in the database. If I went and looked at the account controller, it does the exact same thing. Once it actually signed me in via the SQL database, it created the same bearer token from our, so we have an identity API. the Identity API will actually return you that token, return the user information to us, and we'll call an API to build the token. So basically, we're using that token all the time, whether you're using OAuth, whether you're using local accounts. That's kind of the benefit of what we're doing for you as part of our default account controller, is we're hiding all the OAuth and all that kind of stuff for you. You can just use a common API, and if it's OAuth, we'll take care of the OAuth. If it's local, we'll take care of the local. You don't have to worry about it. And that's kind of the point of the feature is, if you look at the number of lines of code in that account controller, it'll scare you. But it's code that we think we want to share, because we don't want everybody trying to write that code themselves. It took us quite a few months to actually get it right. All the Microsoft security people, you know, scrutinized the heck out of this stuff. So that's kind of security. And then I want to point out that I've got a lot of this stuff, URLs for this stuff in the deck. Support for the cores. I've got another link that I didn't talk about today. We have rich support for OData in Web API. You can use that as well. I've got Yao's Web API tour. He's a great developer on the team. He wrote the test client, and he's got a great tour that kind of goes through the entire product. And obviously, you can find all these sessions on demand on here. And then finally, please send evals to us. Love to hear your feedback on whether you like the stuff we're showing or not. And thank you very much.